WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Sindhuwe Magona raised three children as a single mother under South Africa's apartheid system. She supported her children by working as a maid and then as a teacher. She faced constant absurdities and indignities. Here's one example. During the years that her children stayed home from school as part of the black students' boycott of the apartheid system of education, Magona was working at an elite private school teaching her native African language to white students. Her dream was to get a good education for herself and her children. In her early 40s, after she became an activist in the South African women's movement, Magona won a scholarship to study at Columbia University. After moving to America, she started to write. Two of her books have recently been published in the States, her memoir, To My Children's Children, and her collection of short stories, Living, Loving, and Lying Awake at Night. When Magona finally got the university education she dreamed of, it brought its own surprises and discomforts.
You know, when I was at Columbia, I looked at my class. I was pushing 40, and there were young people there who were 21. There was a South African white woman there who had finished school and worked as a social worker for about 5 years or more, and then decided that she wanted to do her master's. She was 25 or 27, something like that. And I kept wondering what happened to my 15 years that I was sitting in the same class with her.
Did your children stay in South Africa when you came to New York?
Yes, they stayed in South Africa when I came to Columbia.
And how old were they at the time?
They were in their, you know, one was about 14, 16, and 18, something like that.
How did you feel about leaving them behind? Was that a difficult decision to make, weighing the pros and cons? Let me ask you this. What were the pros and cons in your mind about whether you should go to Columbia and leave them behind or stay in South Africa and pass up this incredible opportunity?
I have learned, among other things, to be selfish. Because I had to, you know, I had brought up the children on my own, I had always promised myself that one day, and I'd done all this studying, virtually about 10 years of my life, you know, studying by correspondence. First, you know, the last 2 years of high school, and then I did a general certificate of education through London University by correspondence too, as well as the last 2 years of high school. And then I did a degree through the University of South Africa, also by correspondence. I had promised myself that one day I would go and experience, give myself the experience of being a real student in a real university setting, okay? And this was going to happen when the youngest child had finished high school. Well, if I was waiting for my children to finish high school, I was going to be 80 and gray or dead before that happened. And also just in terms of the relief I needed, I was under such, you know, turmoil. There was such turmoil in my life because of this, you know, lack of education for the children. But really, I would have gone out of my mind if I hadn't left South Africa at that time.
Who did you leave your children with?
With one of my sisters and my mother.
And did they support your decision to go?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. You see, child rearing with us is really more communal than in white homes. Even if I had not left South Africa, it's not unheard of that one of your child will go and live with an aunt or with the grandmother. Not at all.
So when you got to Columbia, you were so, you wanted an education so badly, and you'd worked against such odds to get an education through correspondence schools. How did Columbia compare to what you were hoping for?
In some ways, it was, you know, it was good, but there was, you know, when you look forward to something and you get there, and it's not as rigorous as you were. You know, there was a kind of a let down. And I think it was because also that I was a much older student, and the issues we were dealing with as students were things that I had negotiated for myself, you know, a decade before. You know what I mean? You know, so for me, the academic program was not as challenging as I had thought. But there were other challenges, believe me.
Like what?
Like suddenly finding yourself, I had a studio on campus. And this big trauma, a woman who is 37-year-old woman, this is the first time she sleeps in a room by herself.
You're talking about yourself?
Yes.
So you had a studio apartment, you were living alone, and you were totally unused to living alone.
I had never shared that much space, just by myself. I had never closed a door or locked a door and been inside, and it was night, and gone to bed. And there was nobody in the near vicinity, like in the room next door or in the same room. And it didn't matter if I woke up the next day or not. If I died in that studio, it suddenly occurred to me, nobody would know. Nobody would care. I've never been so scared in my life.
What made you decide to stay in the United States?
The job at the UN and the opportunity it meant.
Your not job at the UN is translating.
Yes, but it also meant that I would move my children from a situation where their schooling had come to an end, and here they would resume their education.
Oh, so you brought them to the States with you?
Oh, yes, that was the reason. That was the main reason I wanted a job outside of South Africa, so that I could take my children and they could get their childhood back, and they would be children, they would be going to school, and one day they would be adults who were trained to do some jobs.
Well, what was it like for them to go back to school, but in the United States, especially after having spent years not going to school?
Oh, it was so hard. It was very hard.
Where did they go to school? Was it a public school in New York?
Yeah. One was already too old. I mean, they were all too old for their classes. Uh-huh. So, but one was definitely, the eldest was now 21. So she had to do she did the GED. Mm-hmm. The younger two were what, 17 and 18 or something, or 18 and 19, something like 17 and 18. And there was a school called McBurney's on the west side. It has closed shop. Unfortunately, it ran out of funds, a private school. And, you know, they helped me. They took them, although, as I said, they were much older than the average student there.
So in a way, they were going through what you went through when you went to Columbia.
Yes.
Being at a different age and stage in their lives than the rest of the students.
That's right. It was very hard for all of them.
So what are your children doing now?
The younger two are back in South Africa. The youngest child is working for a finance company and is thinking of, well, he's not thinking, he's planning to, he has a college degree, but he wants to do his master's now, and he's looking for a scholarship. The middle child dropped out of school. She didn't finish. She took up acting and da-da-da. She's back in South Africa working as a manager for a shop, you know, much like Gap here, but it's only for men. It's a men clothing shop. Mm-hmm. And the eldest child is here. She works as a social worker.
Were you sorry that two of your children went back to South Africa?
No. You see, my idea, what I had promised myself was that after my husband left me, was that I would be father to my children. Because in my mind then, fathers provided for their children, disciplined their children, went to work every day, and made sure they went to school. I would be father to my children. In other words, they would never want to go to school, and I would then have to shamefacedly tell them that I didn't have money to send them to school. I would be there for them. But I had always promised myself, because, you know, after you make all these mistakes, like having children at 18, 19, and by age 23, you have three children, which is what happened to me. I realized then what I had cheated myself out of. I did not have a young adulthood. And I promised myself that young adulthood when I reached my 40s. And so I looked after my children. I did what I thought was a responsible job, you know, being with them and making sure that they had a childhood and that they would have a future. But I always told them, and I told myself, that there would come a time when they would be on their own. I wasn't going to be mother to them for the rest of their lives. I was very much looking forward to my 40s, because the youngest would be 18 and I would kiss them goodbye. So when I brought them here, I sat down with each child to ask if they wanted to come here. This was this opportunity. But if they didn't want to go to school, they were not coming here. And the understanding was that after they finished their first degree, they were on their own.
My guest is South African writer Sindhuwe Magona. She now lives in New York. More after this break. This is Fresh Air. Back with South African writer Sindhuwe Magona. Have you been back since the end of apartheid?
Oh, I went back. I went back in April, because it just was something that I knew I had to witness, I had to be part of, I had to be there to see, you know, to see it happen.
So you voted?
I didn't.
You didn't vote?
No.
Why not?
I didn't think this was a real vote. I knew the ANC was going to win. Everybody told me this a year or 2 years ago. And so it just felt like kind of false for me to go and think I was voting for anybody, because it was such a foregone conclusion who was going to win. No, I didn't vote. You know, because of the moment in history for South Africans, the white government had to go. This I understood. And another group had to come in. And for it to be the ANC and not the PAC and not Inkatha and not anybody else is because of history. The ANC is the party that has opposed apartheid for the longest time. The PAC is a splinter group that broke away from the ANC. And so I knew that as people in that country, we were going to vote the ANC in. And not because of what it was promising. Virtually, if you looked at what their tickets, the ANC, the government, they were promising the same things. Virtually, to the last letter. I am not, you know, I'm not a member of any of the political parties, so I was free to vote for anybody I chose. I just didn't feel that this was a real vote, and I think in 5 years I will vote.
Now that there's a new government in South Africa, Nelson Mandela is the president, apartheid is over, do you have any interest in returning to live there?
Yes and no. I would love to go back to South Africa. But as long as I still have to work, working in South Africa is not something I'm looking forward to. At my age, I've been working at the UN now just over 10 years, and I have just about 10 years more to work. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I've worked in South Africa longer than 10 years. I have nothing to show for that. Absolutely nothing. I have, except the 3 children who are still alive. They're adults now. I have no pension. I have nothing in South Africa. You see, the job I have here gives me a feeling of some security that when I'm old and, you know, and gray, I will have a plate of food on my table. I will have a table to put a plate on and food on that plate. This is not something that South Africa taught me to believe. I have not worked in South Africa and then felt that because I was working in that country, my life was secure. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
And going back to South Africa always is traumatic for me.
Why is it traumatic for you to go back to South Africa?
South Africa is a country that has brutalized me, stultified me, denied, dehumanized, bronzed me, as I say. And, you know, that will take a lot of healing. And now I've acquired a rather expensive habit, writing. And I love my writing, the doing of it. Okay? And as someone said, you know, a writer needs a room of her own. And I cannot be quite sure that I would have the space in South Africa to do that writing.
Well, it's interesting you should say that, because one of the things that upset you when you first came to New York to study at Columbia was that you had a room of your own.
Yes, I've gotten used to it
now. Right, because then you were afraid if you died overnight, no one would care, no one would notice, no one would care in the morning.
Only the stench would warn the neighbors that, hey, something went wrong there. This was a frightening thought. You know, in South Africa, we hear of those things from people who work in domestic work, or in the paper, if you read the papers, that, you know, this little old woman who lived by herself died, and then the neighbors noticed the stench. And it had always puzzled us how you could be dead and nobody knew. Because we live such open lives, you know, into where we're always into each other's houses all the time. That you are sick and you die and nobody knows. Like in my language, there is a curse. May you die alone, because nobody should die alone.
Well, you know, you have a couple of memoirs, a book of short stories. Your memoirs are written in the form of a grandmother talking to her grandchildren. Do you actually have grandchildren yet?
Not yet.
So why did you use that form to write your personal story?
Because I was not a writer. My big aim was to write a book, you know, in my life, to write a book. And then when I finally sat down, I realized I didn't know what book I was going to write. And I would start a short story, and by the second paragraph, I would see my life there. And nobody had taught me that you could disguise facts and make them fiction. I didn't know anything. And then I thought, well, since I always seem to be writing about myself, maybe I should write about myself. That was one hurdle. Once I went over that hurdle, then I said to myself, but why should you write about yourself? You're not famous. You're nobody. Who will want to read any book about you? Then I thought, oh, well, maybe not now. maybe in 100 years' time, I was convinced South Africa would change. I didn't write this book for today. To my children's children, it's not a book that I thought was important for now. But I certainly thought that all the things we did, all the things we believed in, all the things, you know, how we grew up, how we lived as ordinary human beings, somebody will want to know.
Sindhuwa Magona is the author of two books recently published in the States by Interlink, a memoir called To My Children's Children, and a book of short stories called Living, Loving, and Lying Awake at Night. She spells her last name M-A-G-O-N-A, Magona. This is Fresh Air.